From emerging and advancing photonics technologies to roundtable discussions with industry experts and talks with scientists and students entrenched in the furrows of photonics and optics research and everything in between. Join us for Following the Photons, a photonics podcast, hosted by Justine Murphy, multimedia director with Endeavor Business Media's Design and Engineering Group. We'll take you on a deep dive into the realm of one of the most exciting and fastest advancing industries in the world. Hello there, I'm Justine Murphy. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Following the Photons. In this episode, I talk with Dr. Noelle Goddard, CEO of QNECT, a startup company filled with scientists, engineers, and developers dedicated to advancing quantum technology. She is a serial entrepreneur, having founded and formerly led two biotech startup companies before joining the QNECT management team in 2020. Hello, Noelle. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's great to talk with you. Great to meet you.
It's really a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I did a little bit of research and I see that you started out in the research realm. What kind of stuff did you cover? Where did you start there?
So I actually started college as an engineer, and 2 years into it, I realized that I didn't really like the jobs that I saw my friends who were graduating taking. And I did a summer research internship at a Department of Energy lab, and I realized that I really liked the way scientists work. I liked the problem solving that they do in the lab every day. So I told my parents that I wanted to do science. And it was a funny moment because they were like, how do you get a job doing this? And I don't think any of us really knew the output of it, right? But it put me into the pipeline, like a lot of other scientists, of doing graduate school and then a postdoc, and then eventually becoming professor at Hunter College, which is one of the city university schools in New York. My research topics at the time, I had started in photonics and optics as a younger graduate student, studying levitated droplets, which ironically have some things in common with the quantum work that I do now. But then in later graduate school and through my postdoc, I did mostly condensed matter and biophysics. And I started that largely on the instrumentation side and then would end up going to stuff that was a little bit more biological in nature. But it was interesting. I took a role with a state fund that was trying to identify companies that had very interesting IP opportunities in life sciences, deep tech, robotics, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I met QNECT during that time and then decided to take this huge jump to come over to the quantum space.
What exactly attracted you to that quantum space? Because they're sort of related, but there's, you know, obviously a big difference there.
Still gaps.
Yeah, still exactly. Gaps. Yeah.
So I was sourcing deals for this seed investment fund. And part of deal sourcing when those types of investment funds are looking to place some money on a company is to see not only new opportunities, but what are their potentials within industry. And QNECT started as a quantum memory company. So the university technology that they were spinning out was this room temperature quantum memory, which I thought, first off, I didn't know of any quantum processes that worked well at room temperature. So it was an interesting moment to see something that was truly very different in the field, well differentiated. And the sideline of that was, could it solve a problem because it didn't require the other types of infrastructure that are necessary for a lot of other quantum, which are like dill fridges and high vacuum and sort of exquisite physics infrastructure? So could it solve a problem within a market that could add value to? And the answer was quantum networking. So we take for granted the fact that everything that supports the networks that we have today are fiber hubs and data centers that have boxes in them that are addressed remotely that nobody gets anywhere close to. Mm-hmm. It's great for that type of communications, but there's not many quantum tech that can sit alone in a room that don't need a graduate student to come in and tweak them. So would there be a way to move our tech towards that? So I thought it solved an interesting problem for being able to scale quantum tech for quantum networking.
Okay.
So the company was founded by two graduate students and their professor in the last month of 2017. And for the first 2 years or so, because they were still at the university, they participated in the NSF iCORE program, mm-hmm. which is like a funded customer discovery program that NSF sponsors for graduate students who are thinking about commercializing technologies. And through that, then they decided to actually launch an actual company. And I met them just after they had launched, maybe 8 months, 9 months into it, when I was working with the seed fund for New York. QNECT is a quantum networking company. We specialize in building technologies that enable distribution of entanglement over optical fiber. And the most common application of that would be quantum communications. But there's some forward-leaning types of applications that we're all hoping to enable. Some of those are distributed sensor arrays, distributed computing, and that distributed computing idea rolls into something that people very commonly call the quantum internet, which is the idea of quantum devices connected by quantum channels that support quantum transactions.
Okay. What are some things that you guys are working on now? Do you have any initiatives coming up or things that you're already working on that you can talk about?
Sure, we're always very busy.
I'm sure.
The company went from being a single product company to a six product company in 2020 when we decided to build a network product suite. So these were the components, which at the time we were thinking about product suite that would help support long distance quantum protocols. So that product suite was called the Quantum Repeater product suite. But there were six components in it, and all of them needed to be invented. So this is a rather large lift for a small team in a small budget. I'm proud to say that at this point, we've commercialized five instruments. So that's a great situation.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yes, absolutely. As separate components, but this is the year where we really switch from being a component company to a systems company.
Okay.
And the idea behind it is that these products work together, governed by some software which addresses them, and the products themselves sit in a rack, very similar to what you would hope to be the fielded type scenario in a
Okay.
data center or a fiber hub.
And so, what role does this play, I guess, in the overall photonics industry?
Yeah, what does quantum do, right? This is
Right.
a
Exactly. Yeah.
always a very good question.
Yeah.
So I think that we're still a little bit of the exotica niche side of photonics, but it is a really natural extension. There are so many things within photonics today that are enabled because quantum makes it possible, but there's not necessarily quantum as the application. So, I mean, all sorts of processes in lasing and other things are governed by the fact that quantum works. But can we make quantum work for us? I think, well, at least at this point, one of the very cool things about quantum, everybody always talks about it as spooky action at a distance, but this idea that you can have two entangled particles that you can do something with, that you can share something, because as long as they're entangled, they have these very special characteristics. The idea of being able to use those for something good in application was not something we could have thought about a few decades ago. I mean, it was all in theory. Now we
Right.
actually have technologies that are starting to make it possible. And that's, of course, the root of quantum computing, which stands to be an incredibly powerful application of using these principles of quantum to be able to do something good in the application space. In quantum networking, the idea of being able to create very secure protocols that are basically physically secure by the fact that the laws of physics now govern the security, as opposed to a mathematical algorithm, which is how all of our current RSA and other things work. That's a very powerful application when you start thinking about how much we do on the internet and other things that are transactions that are governed by keys or some other type of encryption, whether it be e-commerce or these video calls, right? The video calls have codes,
Right.
right? In order to get on them. All of this stuff is governed by some type of encryption and protection. And we, as a global community, have been using them now in order to be able to do commerce with each other. To continue to do that safely, obviously, is a priority with huge impact. So if quantum can end up being the next version of RSA, which we all rely on now, that would be very exciting. But of course, there's development time. So I think, there are big applications, but we always have to remember that basic science takes time, and then transitioning them over into technologies takes time.
Right. And so if someone said, well, what are the advantages for me to go into the quantum area instead of conventional technology, what would you say?
I think it's always very fun to see things other people haven't seen before. I think this is one of the coolest things about doing basic research. I would say that there's a different type of high in trying to figure out how to transition something which is very beautiful science into something which is a usable technology. And I
Okay.
hate it when people sort of like make the division between science and engineering, but I would call it a just transition. A lot of QNX instrumentation, in its first generation, it works with a certain set of performance specs, and it's never simply an engineering change that gets it to the next performance specs. It's typically a very intertwined process of both basic research and science informing some part of the engineering, and then that enables us to prove what we do. And then eventually get it to a point where, and I don't think I could have ever imagined that it would be practical to communicate with single photons. The entire idea of being able to put it on the infrastructure we have now that has been in the ground for decades and actually see it work, That's very surprising that it all could be possible. So the idea of being able, that's a different type of discovery. So I think that's always a great high.
If someone wanted to get into this area of the industry, what are some things that you think they should know? What kind of advice would you give?
So I can tell you from when we try to hire people, one of the sort of unicorn positions that's very difficult to find a lot of talent in are optomechanical engineers.
Okay, why is that?
There are only a few graduate programs in the US. And in general, I think a lot of those are located in institutions that are near companies like defense contractors, which tend to hire, it's a feeder, right, from the university into the larger industry. So I think that optomechanical engineering is always a really great background because it's very much in demand. Typically, a lot of engineering programs that have some type of optics option are another great thing. And sometimes there are, depending on the university, there's something called physics instrumentation programs, which are kind of sitting between physics and engineering, which is good. And obviously doing physics with a quantum bend. So almost all of the physicists that we have here at CUNECT studied atomic physics. So they're all AMO physicists. So that's the flavor of sort of physics specialties. But also it's possible to study quantum optics and specialize in quantum optics and advanced degree program. So basically, I think that in terms of what you should study would be engineering fields that have a physics side to them or physics with an applied side. Or it's quantum and atomic physics, I think is both very powerful for working in this field.
Well, where do you see the future of quantum heading? I mean, it's obviously very exciting. Things are advancing pretty quickly at this point from the theoretical to real world things. So where do you, in your perspective, from your view, where do you see that stuff going?
Personally, I believe that quantum technologies in this country, at least, have been highly supported by venture capital on the front end and hyperscaler type companies like Amazon and Microsoft and others. So there's a lot of money driving what quantum would be in the next 5 to 10 years that came through the aspirational side of venture, which I think is important. But I almost always think that there's a correction period that follows the sort of aspirational frontier tech type ideas where people really start to dig into the problems and say, yes, this is very interesting. I know this is the long horizon goal that we would like to hit in 10 years, but in order to get there, we have these other 20 problems that stand in our way. Some of those are broad. So I think quantum computing has found this to be a scaling problem. Everybody needs more qubits in order to do what I would just sort of glibly call useful computing, but getting more qubits is hard. It's either a manufacturing problem or it's a problem of learning how to connect QPUs, or it's, there are lots of different underlying problems there. And then if they can solve that, they have yet another problem, which is whether they're, if you want to build fault tolerant machines and you want to do error correction and these other things, there are all these in between steps, which themselves may need 5 to 10 years worth of research and development in order to be truly applied
Oh, wow.
before we get to kind of those final goals. So I would say that what we're fleshing out now is the devils in the detail type of questions.
Right.
So we've had the aspirational dreams. We have money in quantum, which is important for seeing any field blossom, both at government allocations and also from venture. Obviously, the SBIR programs and these other programs will always support young companies trying to get into these spaces who are also in this aspirational mode of what could be done 10 to 20 years from now. But I think that the whole field is starting to better identify what are the limitations for the focus problems that will help us all get to this being scalable tech, right? I think in all of the quantum verticals.
Right. And so you mentioned, government support and those kind of things. When they come to you or when you go to them, how much explaining do you have to do?
So government comes in many flavors. So certainly there are agencies within the government that have strong quantum initiatives already. And the Department of Defense and the Department of Energy have been leading that in two different ways, because they have a tendency to be going in two different long-term visions. The Department of Energy has been supporting this concept of a quantum internet for, well, CUNECT was receiving grants from them in 2019, and we weren't the first. So I would
Oh,
say
wow.
somewhere in the sort of mid-tens is when the Department of Energy first started these sort of initiatives in identifying what were some of the key technologies that needed to be invented in order to make a quantum internet possible. And they've continued with that vision, and they have allocations in the CHIPS Act and other things in order to do that within the Department of Energy itself in the coming 5 years. And then on the Department of Defense side, because there's so many applications which improve position, navigation, and timing. So that's on the quantum sensor side. In quantum networking, it's about security. Those types of applications are important to all countries. And because of that, it certainly the Department of Defense has had very applied and focused questions that they would like to see answered in that set. So I would say that typically what happens in these types of small business opportunities is that the opportunities are either very clearly defined as building something that fits a need. So that would typically be on the applied side, or basic research type investigations towards an aspirational goal of how do we take a swath of broad creativity and focus it more towards something which would be eventually portable into a technology.
Right. For the future, what would be your wish list, whether that be technologies or more support or, more education as far as people understanding the quantum realm?
You hear a lot of talk about quantum workforce. I think that something that is important always is to reinvest in not only building a larger scientific community, but also in exciting students at a younger age about why science is interesting and worth working harder for potentially less salary, right? To go into these fields because there are the other types of rewards, which are these types of rewards of getting to discover things, which I think is its own high. It's different than just the monetary piece. So I think that quantum workforce is always one of those things that I would always hope for the United States would be something that we continue to support people who are trying to solve hard problems and trying to do things that people have never done. So that's important. On the funding side, it would be unusual to talk to a startup company that didn't want more money. So I will say that every startup company could use more funding. I think that as we're starting to evolve some of the challenges of operating in a space where you know that there's always going to be a public-private component, means that the speed at which things happen is gated by a lot of larger structures, which startup companies usually just have to, ride the wave as opposed to having a lot of impact on. And if there could be more discussions with the regulators and all of these other things, which end up slowing down processes instead of facilitating them, certainly that would always be helpful to the community because with all of these applications for national security, sometimes things get trapped in strange timelines and excessive guardrails.
Absolutely. In other areas of optics and photonics, there are mentorship programs. Is there anything like that in the quantum space?
You're starting to see a lot of activity with trying to get students excited about STEM in general at a younger age. But some of those are supported by quantum companies. I will say, one of the companies we really admire who's committed a lot of funding and time and resources towards those types of goals is Sandbox AQ. This is the spin out of Google's quantum division into an independent company. The AQ stands for AI and Quantum. They, as a company, have a director of educational outreach that goes and works with middle schools, high schools, and colleges
Oh,
to be
that's
involved
great.
in trying to feed forward, right, at building tomorrow's quantum workforce by getting students excited today.
Is that a type of program that maybe QNECT might be able to or be interested in or try to do at some point?
So we help Sandbox sometimes. As a former professor, I certainly am more than happy to contribute to the educational piece of this, and I believe it's an important one. If we are so fortunate as to have the resources financially to be able to do some of the things that Sandbox is doing someday, certainly we would consider it.
That would be great.
So we've spent a lot of time thinking about this, about where the industry is evolving. One of the things that I think has been very complicated for small companies is that there's a lot of hype in our field. And sometimes the feedback loop is that hype is rewarded by this aspirational venture funding because everybody has to get excited. People take risks on technology all the time. But that driving force, of course, always needs to have a correction. And I think that one of the things we're very proud of, and we've started to say this phrase frequently when we're talking about things, is that we build hardware, not hype. And for the field's future, one of the most important things we can all do is keep it real. I think there are a lot of hard problems to solve, but nobody gets there if it's just talk. And getting hardware into the hands of the people who potentially define use cases and new applications is exactly the way it worked with the initial internet. I think we all take for granted that we're doing Zoom calls right now. But as it happened, the first hardware to do internet protocols came out in the late 60s, early 70s. And that was just packet switching over at that time, copper, not fiber. And it was another 20 years before we even had the basic protocols for TCP/IP, 20 years of development time. for something which is arguably somewhat simpler because it doesn't have all of these precision requirements and stuff that quantum has.
Oh, true.
And we have to give technology the time to evolve, but we all have to also face the problems as being real. Otherwise, we don't create real solutions. And one of the reasons we've been so determined to get hardware into the hands of users is so that people can tell us what's wrong, tell us what we need to design towards. One initiative that we did in New York that we're rather proud of is that we built our own fiber network out of commercial fiber. So we rented fiber from one of the commercial fiber providers. We have a network here where we test all of our products on real commercial fiber, literally for this exact same purpose. We want to know what's wrong so we can build a technology that truly can have impact in the future.
You mentioned 60s and 70s, and it took all this time to get even to where we are now. Have you ever found yourself in a position where you've had to, had to convince people why quantum is so important and why, how much better it is, the advantages of it? Have you ever found yourself in that position?
Oh, sure. I think the nobody does anybody any favors by declaring quantum advantage, which has been done over and over and over again. And sometimes in the media's excitement to advertise a new development, sometimes it's at the level of scientific communicators, sometimes overhyping it to the point that it's the wrong information, or sometimes it's at the level of the actual announcer who's advertising what they've done. And this has happened time and time again in our field. The more of those overhyped moments that start to cause skepticism and other things are dangerous for everyone. And I think that there's so much good science and there's so many amazing things, and people are solving really hard problems. There's so many, particularly these young companies who are coming, they're typically PhD students who solve something very hard during their PhD work. Now they want to make it into a technology and they have to solve an entirely new set of hard problems. They're doing the work, which could someday change the world, but we have to support them and recognize that those problems don't get solved in 5 minutes. I think the lazy side of technology is believing things can be done quickly because sometimes iterations on a theme, like a lot of what we saw in like the app development in the early years, are things which may make an impact on commerce, but they're not making an impact in terms of future technologies. And there's so much coming out of quantum. Even if these big dreams don't end up being exactly what the technology looks like in the future, a lot of invention will come in the process of trying to get there.
Right. The quantum realm is just so exciting. I mean, we get all the time, we constantly get, press releases or, things like that. There is a lot of hype, of course, but people are just really excited about it and it's really growing. And I mean, I love the fact that at Photonics West this year, there was an entire separate, kind of like BIOS is a separate quantum area.
Quantum West.
That was
Yes.
fantastic. Yeah, that was
Yes.
so great. So the word is really getting out there.
I also think it's because technology has come to a point where other disciplines can measure quantum phenomenon. I don't think that was always the case. People sometimes make the joke that nano became quantum, right? So people will say, when I was teaching 20 years ago, we called this nanomaterials or whatever, and now we call it. Because it is the idea of when you get to a different scale, the levels of precision and the phenomena, everything changes. And that's always very interesting. The idea that there's something that we can't see today, but we could see tomorrow better, always leads to this concept of discoveries. So I'm hopeful that we'll start seeing more of it in other fields as well.
That does it for this edition of Following the Photons, a photonics podcast. I'd like to thank our guests for joining me today and sharing their interesting perspectives and expertise. And thank you all for listening. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast feed to keep up with what's happening around the industry and to listen to new and archived episodes. And follow us on social media too. Until next time, keep following the photons.